We made this.
Welcome to the Starlight Ballroom. Hey!
Hello and welcome to Shipwrecked and Comatose, the podcast about Red Dwarf here on the We Made This Podcast Network. My name's Mark Adams and I am here to do a quick intro for the third of our three ever so tenuous, filler kind of, but fun hopefully episodes. For the last 2 weeks, and this week as well, we've been looking at kids TV, and that has been via my old podcast, Right in the Childhood. I had three of our hosts as guests on the podcast. And, well, basically we've reposted them here because we thought you might like to hear us chat about something else. This is probably the most relevant of the episodes because Colin and I have a chat about Maid Marian and Her Merry Men, which features Danny John-Jules as one of the principal cast. Now, we are going to be looking at Maid Marian in a similar way to the way we've looked at the British Empire at some point in the future, probably 2023. So Colin and, we haven't decided yet, but not me, will be looking at each series one by one as specials in the future. But we hope you've enjoyed these chats with us on Right in the Childhood. And without further ado, here's Colin and me having a chat about Maid Marian and Her Merry Men. Hello and welcome to Right in the Childhood, the podcast about children's TV right here on the We Made This Podcast Network. My name's Mark Adams and I am your host. Normally, I do a big-ass spiel about different generations and how my friend Fraser is younger than me, so we had different kids' TV experiences, and normally, we take it in turns to pick a telly show that one of us watched during our childhood, and we compare it because I'm old and he's young, and we never watched the same kids' telly. But Fraser ain't here, so I'm not doing it. But what I have got is I've got a guest host. Welcome to Right in the Childhood, Colin Jackson Brown.
Hello. So I'm 4 years younger than you, so technically we are both Xennials.
Yes.
But there's still a difference.
Ever so slightly.
Because there's, of the stuff that you've talked about in episodes so far, there's been a few that I was too young for. Like, I never watched Robin of Sherwood. I was not old enough for it. Absolutely no knowledge of Chimera, or Chimera, or however the fuck you pronounce it.
To be fair, that's probably for the best on Chimera.
I did kind of gather that. But then I never watched Boy Meets World either. Then there's been a lot that I did watch and absolutely loved, like Dark Season is, I'm sorry, Fraser, you're fucking wrong. It is the greatest kids' TV program of all time. So every episode when Fraser's doing his top five, I'm sitting there going, Dark Season should still be in there.
Hasn't it gone completely?
I think it was the first one to drop out as soon as he got five. Yeah. Disgraceful.
I don't get it.
It's because it wasn't on the Disney Channel.
I've watched it so many times, and I've watched it like one more time since we recorded that episode.
It's because it's great.
Yeah, well, so you've told me your age. Tell me a little bit about you. You're obviously a guest host because I've podcasted with you elsewhere. Tell me about your podcasting experience.
Is this a fucking job interview? I thought we were already doing it.
No, it's just to introduce for the listeners. They're used to Fraser being a wind-up merchant and that's me screeching fair. At him when he's annoying. That's Whereas I don't screech at you as much as I screech at Fraser.
I'm sure there'll be a chance. I do mainly music podcasts. I've got a podcast called Free With This Month's Issue, which is about old free CDs from magazines like Kerrang and Metal Hammer and Enemy and that kind of thing. I've also got a podcast called We Dig Music, which is me and two of my friends going through. At the moment, we are finding out what the best year ever for music is and which our favourite song. So we pick a sort of random year and then we have 10 songs each, which we then vote on and then argue over.
You do argue quite a lot.
It needs to be done, particularly when, you know, Ian or Tracy completely votes down something amazing. and that's where the fun is. but yeah, I also am one of the regular guest peoples on the Red Dwarf podcast, Shipwrecked and Comatose, that you're on.
Yeah.
The listener, Mark. Mark is on, me. Not the people listening, unless the people listening are our other co-hosts, which they might be.
Maybe.
Some of them.
But we did actually do a Right in the Childhood on Red Dwarf, which we posted on the Shipwrecked and Comatose feed.
That's fine. I've got loads of, loads of programmes I want to talk about. So
I just wanted to like play with the dynamic when I brought in guest hosts. And so the reason I asked you was because, well, essentially you've nagged me for nearly 18 months to do this show. And yeah. Every time you say that, I'm like, I didn't like it. And I didn't like it. Tell the people what you've chosen, Colin.
I have chosen the second greatest kids' TV programme of all time, After Dark Season. The utterly fantastic Maid Marian and Her Merry Men, which you inexplicably don't like. And I want to understand why you don't like it and tell you why you're fucking wrong. I'm a bit more aggressive than Fraser. Have you noticed?
You are rude. Also, he tries not to swear and gets cross with himself when he occasionally says fuck.
That doesn't happen with me.
No, me neither. So my experience with Maid Marian was it was kind of just there and I would watch it, but it never made my list of what I wanted to talk about on this show because it never really struck me. I didn't absolutely loathe it, refuse to watch it, etc., etc. But I don't know, it just never really hit with me. I remember that there was a lot of stuff about how Robin was inept and it was Maid Marian who actually led the Merry Men. And they played with the Nazir character from Robin of Sherwood and they cast Danny Don-Jules as a character called Barrington. But that's about it.
Yeah, well, it was basically a way in for kids to get into sitcoms. It was like an introductory sort of thing to it was basically essentially it had the feel of a junior Blackadder because it was written and created by Tony Robinson, so he took a lot of the stuff that he'd done from being in Blackadder. Obviously he didn't write that, but he was Baldrick, so
he was
he took a lot of like the sort of like the feel of it along to it, and it's got some similar sort of absurdist humor, but it's also a lot sillier because it's designed for kids, but it's still funny. And it started in 1989 when I was 7. So you were 11 by that point, and I believe you were already watching grown-up sitcoms like Red Dwarf, because we discussed that on Shipwrecked.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it was just that tiny little bit too late for me.
That's what I think. That's why I think it's interesting, the fact that we are, while we're technically the same generation, there is stuff that I watched that you weren't into and you watched that I, you know, are totally out of my frame of reference as well.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So at 11, I was probably nudging towards... You remember the episode we did where I tenuously chose an anime?
Of course I remember that one. I was in that episode.
Oh, of course you were. Yeah, you were. I was nudging towards that, I think. Maybe not quite, but I was nudging towards that era of my childhood, which does explain a lot why maybe I missed Maid Marian rather than I didn't like Maid Marian.
But and I think because it missed you at that sort of time, I think if you were older, you would have appreciated it. And if you were young, you would have appreciated it. But you were just the wrong age. Because it's not just a kid's thing, because I used to watch it with my dad. And my dad at that time was about the same age I am now. And he used to be laughing just as much as me. There's some absolutely brilliant jokes in there. There's pop culture references that obviously maybe haven't lasted the entire time. But there's jokes I remember in there about playing a game of Chronic the Hedgehog and stuff like that. which always stayed in my head. There's also Gary and Graham, the two soldiers, one of whom is now Mark Billingham, who's a really successful crime author, who wrote the the Thorn novels, which are really good. But yeah, the Gary and Graham, the two sort of hapless Norman guards. There's one where somebody says something about everybody's, all these days, people are just making career moves. And the other one says to him, I wouldn't want to move to Korea, which I've always thought was funny because I'm that kind of idiot.
So you feel like the humour was heavily on the kind of puns and cheesy dad jokey kind of humour. That does sound like Tony Robinson.
There is a lot of dad jokey humour, but then I am a dad and it's what I do. And, you know, even before I was a dad.
I mean, we both, as you mentioned, are hosts for Shipwrecked and Comatose, a deep dive podcast about Red Dwarf.
Yeah.
And the big comparison is that Danny John Jules is the cat in Red Dwarf and Barrington in Maid Marian. And I wonder if I'm actually going to get more out of it now because I'm a massive fan of Danny John Jules. He replied to Shipwrecked and Comatose's Twitter once and I had an absolute fucking fanboy meltdown starstruck thing. And considering I've met the vast majority of my childhood heroes as a wrestling ring announcer, that felt weird because it doesn't happen to me very often.
Yeah.
But it does with Danny John Jules.
He's utterly brilliant in this. I mean, the bit that sort of, you know, if people have never seen any of Maid Marian apart from one clip, they will have seen the Pancake Day song. Which, because he does a song in near enough every episode. I think it might be every single episode. And there's one where it's Pancake Day. It's Pancake Day. Yes, it's Pancake Day, which people share every single year on Pancake Day.
On Pancake Day.
Yeah, it's massively cliched, but I'll allow it because it's Maid Marian and Her Merry Men, and I fucking love it. But yeah, that'll be the one bit that some people will have seen it and won't know anything else about it.
Mm. So how strong are your memories of it? Do you have like a favourite episode or anything like that?
I've got a few favourites, sort of bits. My memories are fairly strong because I've got the DVDs.
Oh, okay.
So I've rewatched the first two series because they're the ones I've got on DVD. I don't remember the third and fourth series as well because I've only seen them when they were on at the time.
Right.
But I do remember, I mean, most of the first series and second series are great. I particularly remember there's an episode which I think is in series two called The Beast of Bolsover, which is where there's somebody else sets up in the forest with his like sort of fort kind of thing, and he's a bit of a bully. And I think partly why I loved that one so much is one of my friends had that there were basically sort of graphic novel adaptations of a couple of the episodes, and that was one of them. And my friend Mike had it, and I borrowed it off him for absolutely ages. Inside the first series DVD, there's actually one of the graphic novels that they've just shrunk down to fit in the DVD case.
That's actually a cool little extra.
Yeah, I love the artwork. It's similar artwork to the drawings of them that you get in the credits at the end.
Oh, that's even better. Yeah. I'd forgotten about that, the credits at the end, but now I do remember it. And I actually remember liking that. I remember it being cool. And they were quite funny, the cartoons at the end, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, it's sort of like caricature-type drawings of them.
Yeah.
And it's got them like swinging on ropes and stuff like that. It wasn't that they changed that at the end of every episode. I think it was the same drawings at the end of each one. But yeah, it was a nice thematic sort of thing.
So my memory is really, really vague. I know there was an inept Robin, a very, I was going to say ept, but the word I'm looking for is capable Maid Marian.
Ept is a good word. I like, you hear about inept all the time. You never hear about people being ept.
That's not a word. That's why.
It is now.
Oh, for fuck's sake. So okay, an inept Robin, an ept Maid Marian, and the cool guy called Barrington. I don't even remember if there was like a Little John, a Friar Tuck, a Alan a Dale, or...
There was Little Ron, who was brilliant.
Oh, for fuck's sake, yes, there was. Wasn't he like actually little?
Yes. It was the legendary actor Mike Edmonds, who's also in Time Bandits, and he also played Logray, the Ewok shaman in Return of the Jedi.
I love that you know the Ewok shaman's name. Yeah. You could have just gone with the Ewok shaman. Wasn't he stripy, the Ewok shaman?
He was. He was sort of like blonde and cream sort of stripes. Is my second favourite Ewok after Wicket, obviously. they're short furry people. They're like me.
Okay, so there was a little Ron. Was there like an, I don't know, Alan the Fail or whatever?
No, there was the, so you got Maid Marian, Robin Hood, Barrington, Little Ron, and then the fifth member of the gang was Rabies. He was sort of his own character. I think he was a little bit of a mixture of all of the others, but he was basically, he was played by Howard Lou Lewis, who was in, there was a sitcom thing that my mum used to watch that he turned up in. That I can't remember. It might have been Brushstrokes, or it might have had the same bloke out of Brushstrokes in it. But it was an early 90s sitcom that I was, you know, I don't think has particularly stood the test of time, but Rabies was in it. But yeah, he's basically this sort of, he's the village idiot, basically, of the gang.
I don't remember Rabies at all. And when you mentioned Little Ron, that did kind of trigger a memory, but I don't remember Rabies at all. Would you say that he was the least memorable character of the lot from your experience, or am I a weirdo?
No, I think the least memorable character, I would say, is probably Robin Hood out of all of them.
Suppose.
Rabies has a lot. I mean, they all, it's a good ensemble. They've all got things to do in each episode, and they all bring different things. I mean, like, for example, when we've been talking about Series 5 of Red Dwarf recently, they hadn't got much to do for Holly at that point. So
no.
She ended up having like sort of 4 or 5 lines an episode. There's nobody that is sidelined and left out like that. Everyone gets pretty much equal sort of screen time and is there for a reason, for their own sort of comedic purposes. And no, I don't think there is a lesser one.
It's funny what you remember, isn't it? And yeah. I think that's what's fascinating about this episode that we're doing. I've explicitly framed it that you not only come on and pick a show that you liked, but also you're almost filling in the Fraser role in as much as you're bringing something I have very little knowledge of at all, yeah. Even though it's my era.
Yeah.
And that's cool.
Well, that was the plan.
Yeah. So I think we'll watch the pilot, as we always do.
Yeah.
And what was that one that you mentioned before? Should we watch that one?
Yeah, we could watch. So How the Band Got Together is the first episode, and The Beast of Bolsover is another one that we can watch.
Cool. Right. So we're going to watch some Maid Marian. I'm going to reassess my opinion. And do you know what? I actually want to like it.
Good.
Because after this discussion, it feels like I've missed something rather than I didn't like something.
Yes. I think there's a lot more to like in it than not like. I don't remember noticing any sort of 80s ick or anything like that.
Which
probably helps because it's a kids thing, because it didn't come up that often. And it was a BBC kids thing as well. So, you know, the classier, more middle class sort of audience.
Maybe. All right, let's watch some Maid Marian and her merry men.
Good plan.
So welcome back. It's been seconds for the listeners, and it's been months.
4,000 years.
So we weren't planning on taking a gigantic break between the two. We were probably going to, in an ideal world, record a week or so later. That isn't what happened.
It's really not.
No. So we both had to listen back to the first half before we then watched the episodes. But this is a thing when you're amateur podcasters rather than paid for it. We both had shit go down, didn't we?
Yeah, life, you know, that kind of bollocks.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so Maid Marian is a thing. Do you still love it?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you not? Am I going to have to fucking fight you?
I don't think my opinion's changed. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't special to me.
You just rubbish.
So there's lots to like about this, but it feels almost like, if we're going to be calling it this going forward, the Fraser era, where I can recognise something's good, but it just doesn't hit me right in the childhood, for want of a better cliche.
Yeah, but it wasn't something you watched when you were a child, as we discussed a few minutes ago for other people.
Well, I actually think I did. I just didn't love it.
Right.
And I think that because I did recognise a few of the gags in the episodes that we watched. And when I was looking at the episode guide, I do remember there was an episode called The Whitish Night. And I even remember that it jogs my memory. And I remember that it went something along the lines of, ooh, the whitish night, and was a piss take of Robin of Sherwood, which I did love.
Which I had not properly realised until about an hour ago. Because I never watched Robin of Sherwood, because I was slightly too young for that at the time.
Yeah.
So this and the Disney Robin Hood was my introduction to the Robin Hood sort of stories, really. I don't think there are any other, because Robin Hood Prince of Thieves was in between series 2 and 3 of Maid Marian and Her Man.
Was
Maid
it Marian now? Merry Men.
It was. Howard Lou Lewis, who plays Rabies, is in Robin Hood Prince of Thieves.
Is he?
Yeah. And that basically one of the reasons that there was a bit of a gap between series 2 and 3 is because he was off filming Robin Hood Prince of Thieves.
Good grief.
Yeah.
Would you like to know my interesting fact about Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves?
Go on then.
The character of Akeem in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves was originally called Nazir. And the reason they had to change it is because Nazir was a character created exclusively for Robin of Sherwood.
You mentioned that in the Robin of Sherwood episode.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
And I think it's fascinating that they thought that Robin of Sherwood was so good, because it was, that they nicked him, even though he wasn't part of the legend.
It's almost like those trap streets that map companies put, where they put a fake street on a map somewhere, just a little tiny one, so that they know if someone else has copied their map.
Oh, is that a thing they do?
Yeah. So it's a copyright trap. Which lots of things do. Encyclopedias do it as well. They'll put a little, really minuscule, not massively important fact, and then if somebody else repeats that fact, they know that they've stolen it from there.
Fascinating. So,
but yeah, I actually had to listen to the Clannad theme tune to Robin of Sherwood earlier and was like, oh yeah, the Whitish Knight is totally a piss take of this.
And the Clannad thing is fucking beautiful. The whole soundtrack to that show was wonderful. But we're not talking about Robin of Sherwood. You should watch it, though.
Is it as funny as this? No, it fucking
No, it's not as funny as this, but it's actually incredibly good. But one thing I would say is actually slightly better in Maid Marian compared to Robin of Sherwood is that they get the dirtiness right in this. Every peasant is dirty as fuck.
Well, the opening of the first episode is Barrington rapping about mud.
Yes.
And, you know, they're all eating mud. Mud is absolutely everywhere in Worksop. There's not in the episodes that we watched, but there is an episode where somebody refers to, or there's a little cafe called Mudgy Like.
Nice.
Instead of Spudgy Like, which my mum still calls baked potatoes with whatever fillings spud you like, and my dad always refers to it as mud you like because of Maid Marian and Her Merry Men.
Brilliant.
So I like the fact that, like, you know, nearly 35 years later, there's jokes that me and my dad are still doing from Maid Marian and Her Merry Men.
And I guess when a telly show impacts on you like that, it will always be a favourite. And, you know, for me, that's stuff like Red Dwarf that you and I podcast about, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and a few others, but nothing really from as young as this was for you, I don't think.
Well, this was just before I would have got into Red Dwarf. So this would have been sort of a gateway into that kind of thing. I mean, there is a lot of similar humour in there. There's the bit in Beast of Bolsover, the second episode we watched, where they've basically been kicked out of their hideout, and Robin's talking about what clothes he can take with him, which is basically Cat choosing how many racks of suits he can take into stasis.
Yeah, I did think that.
That's almost a stolen joke. I think it's probably influenced.
They were both running concurrently, though, weren't they? Red Dwarf and Maid Marian.
They were, but that was Series 1 of Red Dwarf, so that was 2 or 3 years before that series. Danny John-Jules is in both, so they're allowed.
Yeah.
He obviously didn't mind. It was his character.
Yeah, and looking through the cast, you mentioned before the break how it was really, really strong and tight, and they had the right characters and they cut the right characters. So, you know, there's no Alan the Dale, there's no Friar Tuck. And it seems to me that they really got that right. They did an Azir with rabies, which is a great thing. And the other four characters are, is Barrington, Barrington's probably, is he Alan the Dale?
There's a bit of Alan the Dale in there. I think he's the closest to Alan the Dale. Mm. He's basically like the second in command, which, if I remember correctly, that's what Alan did.
I think Will Scarlet was second in command, wasn't it?
He could be a bit of that. They're all a bit of a mashup of each one. Obviously, little Ron is little John, not really much else. Rabies, there's a bit of Friar Tuck in there.
Perhaps.
But yeah, they're a bit of a mix-up, but they're also their own characters. Mm. But when you're talking about the cast, the fact that they used pretty much the same group of what would be extras in other series as the peasants all the way through. You know, you've got the same group of actors. Sometimes they'll be like just in the background somewhere, but then they'll have a speaking part in another episode, which I think is quite cool.
Yeah, I think that they did a really good job of using the Robin Hood legend as inspiration, as both to satire and to create the perfect example is the little Ron thing on the bridge.
Yeah.
Was exactly the story of Robin Hood, which was also done, I know you haven't seen it, but also done in Robin of Sherwood really well.
Yeah. Well, the second episode, Robert the Incredible Chicken, is the archery competition.
Oh, brilliant.
Where Robin goes in disguise, only in this he's disguised as a giant chicken. Which I think is a bit of a nod to the Disney film where there were giant chickens in it.
Of course. Yeah.
You know, foxes and chickens that seem to get on quite well without, you know, killing each other. Well, foxes killing the chickens, it doesn't tend to happen the other way around. Not known any chickens kill foxes. However, I am not an expert.
I mean, I'm not aware of that either, but who knows? Maybe.
The costumes are really good as well. I was watching them on DVD, which we've got hilariously late 90s, early 2000s computer-generated menus.
Brilliant.
With, like, the arrow flying through. And you know when you've got, like, an animation for about, like, a minute and a half before you can actually choose anything on the menu?
Oh, dear.
That kind of annoying thing. Oh, and also, one of them had the absolute worst DVD extra I have ever seen, which was a Find the Chicken game, where you just had to click on lots of things and see if it had a chicken underneath it.
Brilliant.
But yeah, I was watching it on the DVD, so not all of the episodes have got commentary on them, but the exact two that we chose have got commentary.
Oh, so, right, okay.
I watched both of those, and there was a bit at the, how the band got together is just Tony Robinson,
right?
And then the other one, you've got Maggie Chapelhow, who's the costume designer, Christine Powers, who's the makeup designer. So basically, talking about lots of mud, and David Bell, who was the director, doing the commentary as well as Tony Robinson, and Maggie Chapelhow was talking about how the brief for the costumes was Mad Max meets Jabberwocky meets Glastonbury Festival, which I think's that's pretty much what they got.
Yeah.
There's a hell of a lot of Glastonbury in there.
Well, I mean, it starts with a song about mud, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah. But yeah, I still love it. I've been watching it with my daughter today, and she loves it, and it's great. And I'm going to... I don't think I watched much of Series 3 and 4 at the time, because there was a few years gap, and by that point, I was the age that you were when these first two series came
Which
out.
Makes sense.
So at that point, I was probably into some slightly edgier... I hadn't gone down an anime route, but I think I was probably watching Terminator most of the time.
Dark Season, maybe?
Dark Season was earlier. Dark Season was 91.
Was it?
So that was at the same time as I was watching Series 2.
Oh, right,
two.
Okay. Good grief.
Yeah. But no, I still really like it. I mean, I think one of the things that I did love, particularly with watching it with my daughter, who's like six in a few days, I think Marion is one of the first really strong female protagonists that I remember.
And you know what? I was really kind of a little bit worried that it would be along the lines of the two Ronnie's worm that turned kind of powerful twin and, you know, basically offensive, written by men for the lulz. And it really, really wasn't. She was definitely a very strong, positive female role model, which I was really pleased to see.
Yeah, well, Tony Robinson had got a young daughter at the time that he wrote it. That's what inspired him to... His inspiration for writing the series at all was he was watching his daughter play football.
Mm.
And basically, she wasn't the team captain, but she was basically running the team and taking charge and bossing everybody about. And he was like, you know, if she was Maid Marian, she would be running the whole thing. So... decided to write it that way. But I've always loved characters like that. So it's like, you know, Rey from Star Wars, I absolutely love. And, you know, Coraline and Ripley and Moana. You know, so the kind of character that I want to introduce Elodie to. Most of those she already knows, but Ripley, not quite yet. Apparently I'm not allowed to show her aliens until she's at least 10.
Funny that.
Tried. But yeah, another influence of it that I hadn't mentioned previously that only just occurred to me this week watching it, there's a lot of the young ones in there, which I also absolutely love. The way some of the speech is structured really reminds me of how Young Ones is written.
Right.
Particularly the main one that really made me think of that was Marion's speech about how having this big inspirational speech in the first episode talking about how they'll, you know, go out and be freedom fighters in the forest and people will name pubs after them, is just like Rick's speech about, you know, the punks, rasters and skins all mourning him. And someone will say, the people's poet is dead. But how can he be dead when we still have his poems? It's, you know, that kind of thing.
It's fascinating that the term freedom fighter was used. I did pick up on that and I saw it as a really positive thing. But then immediately after, the ridiculous way of Robin Hood getting his name was great as well. And they really got that balance good. They did get the balance really good on, you know, making some quite grown-up political statements. I mean, earlier on in the episode, you always get a fair trial by a black man on British justice. I was like, oof.
Yes.
Ouchie. I wasn't expecting that.
So obviously, very recently, we've had all the Jubilee bollocks and that kind of utter shite. And you've got the conversation right at the start with Robin and Marion, where Robin's like, I think royalty are great, don't you? They're so natural and cred. And Marion's just going on about this peasant starving to death out there while you make an enormous pile of pants for the royal bottom, which is exactly the same as, you know, them spending ridiculous amounts of money on the Queen's Jubilee when there's more fucking food banks than there has ever been. And, you know, people are in full on poverty.
But Colin, hashtag platitubes.
Fuck the platitubes.
Honestly, I hardly noticed the bloody thing. I had to work fuck it. It didn't impact on my life whatsoever.
I work in an office where one of the team leaders is a devout royalist, and she doesn't like it when I say off with their heads. Apparently that's not allowed.
Treason is what it is.
Well, it's worth it, isn't it?
Should we actually talk about the depiction of King John then, seeing as we're talking about the royals?
Yeah. He's great.
It is. And you know what? The moment I saw it, I had this real kind of like nostalgia blast of very much remembering his skull and crossbone earring because I wanted one as a kid. I didn't remember that until I saw it, and then it really flooded over me. Holy shit, I remember his earring. Weird, really weird. So I must have seen this at least once or twice. And I know I must have watched it, but it is far better quality than I would have thought, because it didn't leave a lasting impression on me, yet it kind of did in us. Oh, I don't even know, Colin.
I still think that you were just the wrong age for it. And because of that, I think if you were a little bit younger or a little bit older, it would have got in there. But because you were in exactly the blind spot for it, it may not be something. But I think it's a shame that you haven't picked up on it now, because I thought you'd really dig it, but never mind.
I did dig it. There's a lot to like about it, but not enough for me to want to binge watch it.
You'd also got the relatable bit for you, being a scout leader, with the end of the first episode where they're doing their, like, I pledged to be a merry man bit. I was a cub at the time that this was going on, so that was very relatable to me, because it's basically like your induction, isn't it?
By induction, do you mean investment?
Investment, yeah. That's the word I was looking for.
We don't do inductions in scouting. That would be wrong.
It's a very long time since I was a scout. But yeah, you know, they solemnly swear to fight injustice, do a good deed every day, cross my heart and hope to die, stick a sausage in my eye.
I did laugh at stick a sausage in my eye, because it's not what you really would have expected them to suggest to put in their eye.
No,
and there was quite a lot of surreal humour like that in this, which I did enjoy.
Yeah, there was another unnamed merry man sitting around the fire in that scene.
Was there?
Which I only just noticed today. Yeah, there's someone sitting right on the right-hand side that isn't one of the main cast. So I don't know if they were originally going to imply that they were a bigger group and then dropped it after the pilot episode. Hmm. But yeah, I've only just noticed that. It didn't get mentioned by Tony Robinson in the commentary at all. So, I think it was just a random sort of extra there. But they were sort of in shadow, and they were on the right-hand side sitting around the fire.
I think for me, Tony Robinson, I know he wrote it, but he was also made to play the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Yes, yeah. Well, he was saying, obviously, he played Baldrick, who was always a good character and, you know, completely stupid, obviously. But he liked the fact that he now had to be a baddie and was able to do much longer monologues and stuff than Baldrick ever got the chance to, because he was always getting cut off by Edmund Blackadder.
Yeah. And I think he, you know, kind of deserved it. He was great as the sheriff and, you know, writing a part for yourself is a little bit self-indulgent, but I think he owned it and did really, really well as the sheriff.
I can't imagine anybody else doing a better job of it. He's absolutely perfect for it. But it's the same with, you know, nearly all of the characters. I can't imagine anybody else in the role being any better.
Yeah, and I think Robinson's really, really good at playing campy evil.
Yeah. And I mean, Kate Lonergan as Maid Marian is absolutely amazing. And she basically had done all she wanted to do in acting by the late 90s and gave it all up to be a gardener, I think.
Good grief.
So, sadly, we don't get to see her in anything these days, but apparently around the London area, if you need a garden doing, she can help you out.
Amazing. So the other thing that I really loved was the... I know it sounds silly, but I noticed the logo and font and the ending credits was... They were really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, like the sort of animated bit at the end apparently was... They'd already, from when they made the first episode, decided that they were going to do some comic versions of the stories.
Mm.
And that was actually a BBC executive's idea, was let's have this... animated bit at the end, because then it will tie in with the art style in the comics, and you know, we can sell more things that way. And I'm glad they did it, because
it's brilliant,
it's great, and it's a brilliant theme tune. They always on CBBC, they always used to have like a big sort of sing-alongy type bit at the end where you'd get Andy Peters or whoever it was singing along with all the words on the screen and stuff. So it was like a karaoke sort of thing.
Yeah. But even like the attention to detail, like ye goodies and ye baddies. I liked that too. That was cute.
Yeah. I really like the sort of like Flintstones level anachronisms in it as well, where you've got, there's a bit in Beast of Bolsover where King John says something to, where's my dinner to Sheriff of Nottingham? Why's my dinner late? And he says, I don't know, my sundial stopped.
Yep, I wrote down that gag as well. I love that. It was very silly.
And then get me a hot dog. We can't, you've eaten all the pets. But then later on, there's little bits in the set design, which I don't know if they appear in the first two series or if it's later than that, but there's like wooden satellite dishes on the side of some of the huts.
Brilliant.
In Worksop and stuff like that.
Brilliant.
And I loved the fact in Beast of Bolsover that Gary and Graham, when they came back into the castle and hung their helmets up, they'd got their names on little plaques by the hooks, just like you would have as a kid at school.
Yeah.
When, you know, the target audience watching it will have had those pegs with their names on it.
So some of the silly humour really, really hit, like those gags you just mentioned, but also the crisp flavours for the rats that Barrington was selling in How the Band Got Together, that made me laugh as well.
Barbecue chicken with cream cheese and chive flavour sounds really good until you remember it's a rat and it's a day out of date as well.
Yeah. But then the whole sequence with Edwina... I don't know why, it just grated on me. The storyline of getting a tadpole adopted and how it ended up in someone's nose. I was just, that one didn't hit.
Well, what I liked about that is it's a brick joke that you've basically forgotten about it right until the last scene. And then the tadpole ends up getting sneezed into the fire. Because I do like it when there's a joke that's been almost sort of forgotten about in the background somewhere that comes back. You know, stuff like that is great.
Yeah, I think the one-off gags worked better for me than that, though. I just, no. It was just that, it's funny, isn't it? As an adult, the silliness, some will hit and some won't hit, whereas as a kid, the silliness always hits.
Yeah, it all hits for me still, because I have not grown up in any way.
I don't think I have either. Maybe I have. I'm a bit scared of that.
We watch everything with subtitles on because my hearing is shit.
Right.
And we were watching Stranger Things earlier, and I realised I still laugh every time the subtitles say someone pants. Which is ridiculously childish, but that's me.
I find it absolutely hilarious the way it describes music in certain things. Upbeat music plays.
Ominous electronic music. Oh, we're watching Stranger Things again.
And honestly, whenever it does something really, really dumb like that, I always read it out and it kind of ruins things and I'm a terrible person. But it amuses me. So I haven't grown up, Colin. I just didn't find the fucking Edwina thing funny. And
I don't think there's many podcasters that have.
No, that's true.
They're the ones that are doing boring fucking financial podcasts.
Oh, they don't count as podcasts.
Beast of Bolsover, do you know where that name's from?
Is it the Beast of Bodmin Moor?
No.
Oh, go on then.
It's the big stuff Bolsover, which is the nickname given to absolute hero Labour politician Dennis Skinner.
Oh, right.
Who was one of the longest serving ever MPs. He was like nearly 50 years before he got voted out, and used to heckle the shit out of the Tories.
Brilliant.
There's a quote by him that is sadly not true, but it's totally the kind of thing that he would say. But there's this quote that's always attributed to him that's he got told off by the Speaker for saying half the Tories on the benches opposite are crooks. And he got told by the Speaker to retract it. So he said, okay, half the Tories opposite aren't crooks. Which is absolutely amazing, but sadly not true. But he used to like heckle the Queen and stuff when she was doing the state opening of Parliament and stuff like that, which is absolute fucking legend. Tony Robinson is a like lifelong Labour Party supporter. And he was actually, he was on one of the committees or something with Labour for a while. And because his name is near to Dennis Skinner's in the alphabet, R then S, he used to sit next to him quite a lot. And it turned out that Dennis Skinner was a fan of Maid Marian and Her Merry Men. I'm assuming he probably heard about it after this episode. So he gave him a copy of the graphic novel version of The Beast of Bolsover, because that was one of the ones that they did, which I thought was quite cool.
Perfect. So should we move on to that episode and have a look at that?
Yeah. Yeah, as usual, sorry, I've been absolutely fucking all over the place, just jumping to
various
different tangents. It's what I do. I am the podcast derailer.
That's also fine, you know, as long as we chat about stuff. So I liked how you couldn't spot that this was a season opener. I think it was just nice that once they'd done the first episode, this is how we got together, they just seemed to carry on. It wasn't done in pointless season runs and that kind of thing. It just, yeah, that I noticed that and I was like, good.
Yeah. There's a little bit of a story arc in the first season. And then later than that, you've got, occasionally there'll be a new character that's introduced that then carries on. Like there's Rotten Rose appears, she appears at the end of series two and then is in the rest of it. And she's basically a sort of rival to Maid Marian. They were friends at school, but then she's on the sheriff's side now. Guy of Gisborne turns up.
Does he?
Series three onwards, Guy of Gisborne is in it. And he's basically a man-child. He's acts like a 4-year-old.
Which is quite similar to the Guy of Gisborne in Robin of Sherwood. I think that they probably deliberately kind of took from Robin of Sherwood because it was so popular.
Almost certainly. I mean, it was a really popular, recent-ish BBC. Was it BBC or ITV?
ITV.
ITV adaptation. So ripe for BBC to take the piss off then.
Yeah. But this episode was very much the classic usurper plot, which is quite a kid's TV kind of almost trope. But I thought it was really well done.
Yes. Beast of Bolsover himself. Obviously, he's Australian, which slightly weird because Bolsover is in, I think, Lincolnshire. Mm. Interestingly, I looked up where Bolsover was earlier and found out that very, very, very close to Bolsover, there is a town or a village called Ryla, spelled R-Y-L-A-H, which is one letter away from where Cthulhu lives.
I thought that was where you were going with it.
Yeah. So, yeah, apparently Cthulhu's house, where he lies dead but dreaming, is quite near to Chesterfield and Bolsover. So, yeah. That's what I learned today. But, yeah, anyway, Bolsover's sort of not that far from Worksop and, you know, Nottingham and Mansfield and that sort of area. I think.
Another thing I've noticed that I liked, but I hadn't associated it as like a Red Dwarf link, was a line, but if he dies, he'll be dead, which is very kind of Red Dwarf style, actually. And also very British. And I wouldn't have thought about Red Dwarf unless you'd mentioned it earlier about the parallels with the cat and stasis. But it does feel almost like... You're right. I think it does feel like, because Danny John-Jules is in there, it's kind of a bit Red Dwarf-y. Yeah.
Definitely enough for us to do some specials on it for Shipwrecked and Comatose.
Yeah, definitely enough for you to do specials on it for Shipwrecked and Comatose.
Yeah, me and Carl are going to do them, I think. Mm.
That should be fun. I would listen into that, and I might even... So I rewatched Britas for the Britas episodes of Shipwrecked.
Fucking better than Britas. I quite like Britas, but this is definitely better than Britas Empire.
Britas Empire is not as good as I remember.
No, whereas this is as good as I remember. But yeah, Beast of Bolsover, the character, obviously, is Australian, which is a bit weird, but that's because the guy that turned up to audition was Australian, very, very clearly, but was brilliant. So they decided to go with it and then change the script slightly so that he talks about wallabies and billabongs at one point.
I did spot that, and I was like, this is weird. But I don't think I'd have questioned it at the time as a kid.
No. No, I don't think I would have... I absolutely wouldn't have known where Bolsover is.
No.
Because I didn't properly until I looked it up earlier and found out it's near where Cthulhu lives.
Well, quite.
But yeah, it's set 500 years before Australia was discovered. Because it was just Aborigine living there at that point.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You know, the proper Australians.
Let's not. So, let's talk about the depiction of concussion. I have seen worse. After all, I watched wrestling as a child. But I don't know. I'm not sure that the goodie should have taken advantage of someone else's mental health problem.
I think you're allowed to take advantage of the mental health problem of the Sheriff of fucking Nottingham. And, you know, if you are the Merry Men.
Yeah.
He would do it the other way around and use it as a chance to kill you. So if you can use it to, you know, give him a bit of a disadvantage, but also help yourself out in a way that doesn't really cause any major problems to him, apart from him getting thrown through the forest by the Beast of Bolsover.
I was going to say, he got a good kick in. At one point, I was amused by the wrestling move that he used. It's called a big swing.
Yes.
And you basically spin him around, but the idea is it makes you dizzy in the wrestling ring, but I loved it when he just lobbed him. That was very funny.
Particularly as it's clearly a dummy that he's swinging round,
which I don't think I'd have noticed as a kid, but it made me. But it was funnier for me as an adult seeing the dummy just go. It was great fun.
Yeah. There's another bit about the costuming that I learned earlier listening to the commentary. The chain mail that Gary and Graham wear is supposed to be made of cotton, but there was one that accidentally got made of rayon, which is a fabric that shrinks if it gets wet.
Oh dear!
Like quite severely, and they end up getting water chucked over them or chucked into ponds and stuff like that quite often. So apparently, I can't remember if it's Gary or Graham that's played by Mark Billingham, but it's the one that's Mark Billingham had this chainmail made out of rayon. Had a bucket of water chucked over him, and within about 10 minutes, it had constricted so much that he was having trouble breathing and had to be cut out of it.
Bloody hell!
So, yeah, use cotton, not rayon, if you're making chainmail armor. Or if you're actually making chainmail armor that you want to work so that you're not being killed by arrows, use actual metal.
Yeah, I mean, that is good advice.
Which also doesn't shrink when you get buckets of water chucked over you. So that's what they should have done.
Yeah. So the ending of the episode where the two different baddies already knew each other and were very pally.
Because they went to Eton together.
I was like, wow. politics has not fucking changed.
Not at all.
Not in a thousand years.
It really did make me think of the Bullington Club.
Exactly that. Yeah, and I think it was supposed to. Even though I don't think we knew it. Well, I definitely wouldn't have known about Bullington Club at the time.
No.
I didn't know about the Bullington Club till David Cameron was in power, but I assume that more politically aware people in the 80s and 90s probably would have been aware of them.
But who was that gag for?
Me.
Do you mean...
But me now, but at the time, my dad was watching it with me.
Right.
And he would have loved it. You know, this is it's a cross-generational thing. It's a program where there's lots of different layers of jokes.
Yeah.
You know, I was watching it earlier with Elodie and she wouldn't have got that in any way. But there was a lot of other jokes that she thought was hilarious. Yeah. This is how bad a frame of reference she has got. She doesn't know who Robin Hood is and know the original stories really yet.
Right. Fair enough.
It was a lot... 80s and 90s, it was much more of a
thing. I would say thousands as well, because they redid... Like, it wasn't Robin of Sherwood, but they did like that Robin Hood thing, didn't they? That with that.
Yes, that was pretty good. I quite like that.
It started well, but I think it deteriorated pretty quickly.
Yeah, but the height of Robin Hood mania that I remember was the really early 90s.
Yes.
Because I can remember me and my little sister running around with our Robin Hood hats on and our bows and arrows when that Bryan Adams song was on the fucking radio for 200 years when it was at number one.
16 weeks.
Yeah. When, you know, that was 91, I think.
Mm.
So I would have been 9 at that point. And we'd been to the Tales of Robin Hood in Nottingham and got bows and arrows there. And I can remember us sort of running around upstairs at home, firing arrows at each other. Ones with suckers on the end.
Of course.
You know, real ones, that would be bad.
Yeah. I remember I put one of those on my forehead and left it there for a while. And then when I took it off, I had a big circle on my forehead for a couple of days.
Yep, they do that.
They do. And I had to go to school and I looked like a dickhead.
I had to go to school and I looked like a dickhead too, but it wasn't because I'd put a sucker arrow in my head. Later on, it was because I had a fucking undercut. But
we all had an undercut in the 90s. Let's not.
But yeah, I never put the sucker arrow on my head because as soon as we bought them, my mum told me about her older brother, Jim, who had done that when he was at school and got a big mark there for ages. So we were forewarned about that, so didn't do it.
Brilliant. Do you know, I did enjoy this. I didn't...
Too fucking right you did.
I don't know. I didn't love it, but I did like it. And I think that's kind of what I expected, to be honest with you.
Yeah, okay. I think you should watch more of it. I think what we need is the Ludovico technique out of Clockwork Orange. We need to strap you into a chair with your eyes like prized open and just have it showing on like 15 different TV screens with different episodes showing constantly, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for a few months. And then you'll get full-on Stockholm Syndrome, and you'll think it's absolutely brilliant like I do.
Or I could just casually watch it occasionally when I'm doing my ironing or something.
I mean, the choice is yours, but I prefer my option.
And I do think I'll probably watch some more, particularly as I'd like to hear you talking about it on our other podcast, Shipwrecks and Kermitos. So I probably will give it a little bit of a binge when I've got a lot of ironing to do or something. I think I'll probably do that.
Good. That's I'm going to take that as a win.
I guess it goes without saying that you're going to watch it again and again and definitely. Again.
I'm going to get the third and fourth series on DVD as well.
Mm. Well, Colin, it's been lots of fun chatting about this, and I know you've wanted to chat about it for quite a while. So I'm glad you finally got to come on and admonish me for not loving it the way you do. I hope you don't mind that I've kind of stuck to my guns, but recognise that there's a lot of good to.
I mean, you. Essentially, you are dead to me. But, you know, you've recognised that there's some good in there, so you may be slightly undead. Yeah, you perhaps a little bit of a zombie kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Good. I think. What? Colin, where can people find you on the internet?
So, I've got two other podcasts other than Shipwrecked and Comatose, as we've kept talking about. I've got Free With This Month's Issue, which is a podcast where me and my co-host Ian, plus a different guest every month, which Mark's done it once that's gone out so far, and another one that we've recorded that'll be out later in the year. Listen to an old free CD or tape from Kerrang, Metal Hammer, Smash Hits, Q, old music magazines, basically, and find the various horrors and delights within. And that's Free With This Month's Issue. You can search for it on podcast apps. There's also We Dig Music is our other podcast. So that's me, Ian, and our friend Tracy, where each month we have a different year and we choose 10 songs each from that year. So we've got 30, and then secretly vote on them and score them and rank them, and then find out the result as we record it, and then argue over it, basically. And that's We Dig Music. They're both on the We Made This Network. They're also on my website, which is wedigpodcast.com. And yeah, other than that, Twitter is Mogwai Fear Satan, and there's links to both of the podcasts and stuff on there.
Brilliant. I think, yeah, people who listen to podcasts know that if someone mentions a podcast on a certain podcast, you can listen to that podcast on whatever podcast platform you're currently listening to that current podcast.
That is true.
I did a thing there. It was bollocks.
Well done.
So thank you so much for joining me for another episode of Right in the Childhood. And until next time, I will eventually, probably won't, come up with a good way of signing off now Fraser's gone.
Good luck with that. Oh no, that's the wrong one.
Right in the Childhood is a podcast brought to you by the We Made This Podcast Network. You can follow the show on Twitter at RITCpod. The show's creators were Mark Adams and Fraser Summers. The show's host is me, Mark Adams. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at MarkAdamsHC. The show's logo was created by Carl Bryan, and the theme tune was composed and performed by Colin Jackson Brown. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed being hit.
Do you know your Daleks from your Dreshigs?
Or your Zygons from your Zagreus?
Do you know what the TARDIS stands for?
And do you know which Doctor Who stories featured Kevin Grimlock, the cyborg T-Rex that became the Doctor's companion?
Then this is a Doctor Who podcast for you. I'm Baz Green, and each fortnight I chat to my son Ben.
Hello.
And the occasional guest as we cover 60 years of Doctor Who on TV, Big Finish, and more.
And I did really enjoy that one. Except that wasn't really actual pirates, it was badger pirates in space, but it was still piratey.
Pirates in space?
Yes. But I am willing to make an exception for pirates this episode.
Donald Sumpter is amazing. I love the fact that he just pops up. He just pops up, probably Rassilon, probably.
Well, they do confirm later on he is.
I think they do,
yeah,
don't
he
they?
He says on Rassilon, yeah. The Redeemer.
Of course he does, bloody hell.
And he has the gauntlet as well, which gives the hint at that.
Yeah. I'm nodding profusely.
Yeah. Going proper classic Doctor Who as well, love it as well. Yes. All.
In a week, has done more for the show than for the last 5 years.
I do like how Ross D. Davies is kind of the PR spokesman for the Centurion special. That's quite fun. Yeah.
And he's also saying, oh, well, Jodie and Chibnall still have an episode left. I'm not going to tread on their feet, but he is 14, just so you know, for the filming purposes. And a week later, Oh, yeah, yeah, by the way, these guys are back. Just thought you'd want to know. Find us on the We Made This Network.
And all good podcast providers.
What about the bad ones?
Yes, them too.
Ah, good.
Because somewhere there's danger.
Somewhere there's injustice.
Somewhere else, the tea's getting cold.
You know, we probably should throw that tea away now. It has been sat there since 1989.
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast, was created and produced by Mark Adams and Kurt North. You can find us on Twitter at Red Dwarf Pod, and we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network, which can be found online at wemadethispod.com or on Twitter at We Made This Pod.